technical and economic realities behind hacking exchanges. It's a little bit of an intro to Gas Token, and then a story about a bunch of exchange exploits we found last year, and kind of how that all came about and what you can do to protect yourself against it. We're going to start with a live demo, so if you guys want to take out your phone and scan this, this is a cryptocurrency or an Ethereum address that's a contract. If you send any money to it, you will, I don't know if you'll get it back, so don't send very much, but it does grant you gas token. So the whole point of this talk is about gas token. So if you send a transaction, what you'll do is mint yourself $5 in gas token. So you will lose $5 if you do this, but you will get it gas token. So try that out if you want. And while this is up on the screen, I'm going to basically take a second to describe what gas token is, what the hack was, and then we'll go through how it all played out. So it looks like everyone's all done. So what this was, what the gas siphon attack was an exploit. Basically, anyone who subsidized costs of Ethereum transactions were vulnerable to this, in that someone could use the subsidized payments to print out gas token. And gas token is this mechanism. Let me take a step back. In Ethereum, there's a mechanism in which you can be rewarded for refunding, for removing state from the network. And so when you remove state from the network, what the Ethereum does is it pays you back in gas refunds. And what this attack is taking advantage of those refunds that are built into the Ethereum ecosystem. And so in order to execute this kind of attack, it's very simple. You deploy a contract, we'll go over in a minute, and the same kind of contract you guys just transacted with. You initiate a withdrawal from an exchange or from someone who pays for your transaction fees. You send the withdrawal to this contract, and the contract does its magic, and then at the end of the transaction, you get minted gas token, and the money comes straight from the exchange, independent of your actual holding on the exchange. And a little background about myself. So myself and Chris are co-founders of the Gas Siphon Attack. So we kind of found this and helped bring it to the attention of the public. I'm also co-founder of Authereum, which is a wallet provider and DAP logging solution, as well as Zero Trust, which is an auditing firm, and we audit a bunch of smart contracts. This is a little definition of gas token, but like I said, it's basically a token that represents a refund on the Ethereum network. The refund is in gas, and the idea being if you spend 100,000 gas on a transaction, you can use this refund to actually only pay 50,000. And there's reasons it exists that we'll get into in a minute. And one big question I always get is gas token good? So is it good to offer someone an incentive to clear the state on the network? And it sounds like a good idea. The reason it exists in Ethereum is because a developer should create state on the network and then clear the state later on so that the chain's not as big. So the incentive is there, but the problem is people are starting to use it for bad. They're hoarding gas tokens, they're bloating the state, so that in the future when the network is very bloated and gas is very expensive, they can get these refunds at a much more efficient price. And so the idea of gas token is a very good idea. The implementation, as we've seen it, isn't so good, so we'll see how it plays out in the end. And how people are using gas tokens today, a lot has to do with arbitrage. So the idea being, if I want to make a transaction on Uniswap and make some arbitrage through exchanges, and I might have a dollar profit to be made, someone else with gas token might be able to make that same transaction. And what they can do is use gas token, and like I said, it reduces the fees. The gas costs, and so what that $1 now turns into $1.10 for someone. And when that happens, they've now effectively gotten an advantage at arbitrage that no one else who doesn't have gas token does. So it's pretty dangerous in that sense. That's usually pretty well coupled with front running. So a lot of people do front running and gas token arbitrage in the same vein, and it works for them. No one really knows how it really affects the network. Finally, exchanges can use gas token as kind of a hedge or gas futures. So you can imagine if exchanges print a bunch of gas token now or in the future when gas is very expensive, they might be able to even that out by basically having bought gas futures now so that when the network's clogged, they can still provide their customers with a very constant gas price. I'm gonna run through the code real quick via the gas token. It's quite simple, and you don't really need to understand code to understand this. But here's the whole contract you just interacted with. And there's only four functions. So here's a set min rate, and all this does is set a rate of tokens you want to mint. So this would say you'd say I want to mint 5 tokens per transaction, so that when you withdrew from an exchange, you'd mint 5 tokens, and you can change this. And the higher the rate, the higher your gas limit of the transaction would be. The actual mint function, again, this is just a token. It's an ERC-20 token, and so you just call token.mint and then the number of tokens that you pass in. So that's also very simple. This is the fallback function. So the reason this works with exchanges is when you don't provide data to a transaction, the contract automatically calls the fallback function. In this case, it is mint. So now it calls the mint function given the mint rate you previously provided. You don't need to do anything. The exchange now is basically paying for you. And finally, you can withdraw the token. So the tokens will live on the contract, and then you withdraw them. And so this is just transferring the tokens out, as well as I think Ether, there's some in there. So it's very simple to execute this. It's dangerously simple, some would say, but it's all good. Here is an example transaction. And then you probably can't see this, but it's an Etherscan contract, and this is a withdrawal from an exchange. And it's a withdrawal of 0.01 Ether, so nothing too crazy. But if you look here, there's a transaction fee of $34 or 0.2 Ether, effectively, and the gas limit is 6.5 million. And so this is from a big exchange, and it basically went straight to the contract, and the exchange paid 6.5 million gas at 30 gigawatt gas price for free. And what people can do with this is now take advantage of it and print gas tokens. So this is the first transaction we did when finding the exploit, and so it's a You can look it up if you want, but it's pretty dangerous. And so who is affected by this? Exchanges like we've just been talking about. Meta transaction relayers who subsidize gas costs. This can kind of be scoped out to just anyone who subsidizes gas costs. If someone's paying for your gas or for your transactions, there's a really, really good chance that you can print gas token on their dime. So if any of you are doing this, just watch out for this. You can set limits to the transactions, but we'll go over that in a minute. In any really EVM-based chain that subsidizes the transactions and has this kind of mechanism built into it. How can they fix it? Don't pay for users' gas. I know it's a really nice UX to be able to pay for your users' gas, but if you are paying for gas, they are going to try to take advantage of the free money. And this is one of the best ways for them to do it. Now getting into a lot of pictures and a lot more interactive stuff. So here's a bunch of pictures of mobile wallets. So this is, you can't see it here, but Trust Wallet, Coinbase, and MetaMask. And why these exist is because I'm showing you that they try to abstract gas away from users. And when they do this, they make the user vulnerable. So you can see here, they have this concept of network fee, transaction fee, and users, can almost guarantee most of you don't look at that too closely. But what these are saying is, hey, I'm sending 0.001 ETH, but the fee here you see is $3.85. And if you're just clicking and you think this is a normal transaction, you're not going to see $3.85. It could also be $30 or up to $300 maybe. And you're going to basically pay that. And then you're going to have no idea because you're going to see 0.01 ETH. And I don't know if there's a good answer. These wallets are all trying to abstract the gas away from the user, and that's a really good idea. But at the same time, it's also dangerous. This is also Argent, and the reason it's by itself is because they kind of do it the worst in that they say it's free, it's paid by Argent. So they don't even give the user the idea that there is a fee associated with the transaction, and it's dangerous. It's nice, but it's dangerous, and so it's just something to look out for. And then going into what we actually did last year, so the hack happened, or the exploit happened last year at DEF CON around this time, and we were basically realized every exchange was vulnerable to an extent. So some exchanges you could have taken $50 per transaction from, some $2, but if you were at a script, you can basically take a million transactions. And so when we found this, we went to one of the more prominent members of the Ether community, and when he realized what this was, he basically said, he smiled and he said, "Oh, well, code is law," and he walked away, meaning you guys should take all the money and run. But it's a lot of the exchanges are in interesting jurisdictions, and we didn't really want to do that. So we decided to work with different people to kind of get this resolved. We got in touch with all the exchanges, and well, you'll see here, and we figured, hey, we'll be the good guys, and maybe we'll collect some bug bounties for this. We'll put in a lot of work, but we'll get paid a little bit. And so here's an example of one of the exchange's bounty pages. You don't need to read it, but what is good to see, it says, if you find an extraordinarily severe issue, we can pay you up to $100,000. And so we did the math. Could have taken $10 million from them. That's pretty severe. They would have stopped their exchange, and they can just give us $100,000 instead. And so we worked with them, and we got in touch with all of them, and we had Telegram chats, and more chats, and more chats, and more chats, and more chats. And it actually went on for a month. And so we all these exchanges, we talked like this for about a month, and it was 2 to 3, maybe even 4 engineers, almost full-time job for a month. And so this is one exchange in particular. And we got through this whole thing and basically saved them. And they offered $800 worth of their token. And so that was a little frustrating. So we responded with a very large email, or large Telegram message you can read later, but what it's saying is incentives are really hard in this space, and you guys are one of the biggest exchanges, and this is what you're offering, and if you can't do it right, no one else is going to do it right. I didn't say it, but it kind of sounds like next time we find something, we're just going to take the money and give you what we want, but it's hard to explicitly say in something like this. They ended up responding, and they gave us much more money, a couple $1,000s, not anywhere near $100,000, but it was something, and that's honestly all you can really do with this kind of stuff, unfortunately. This is another example of an exchange, and this one's quite funny. Again, don't read it all, but I'll highlight some things in the next slide, but what we ended up doing was sending an email to a ton of different exchanges. It was very hard to get a hold of them, so we basically sent an email to maybe 50 or 100 different people with the same message, hey, there's a vulnerability, we can't get in touch with you, but if you get in touch with us, we'll help you out. So we got this email from this exchange, and this was the CEO, and Chris sent the email, and he said, hey, here's who I am, here's what we found, we think you're vulnerable. And he responded with, good for you, we are not fraudulent, there's nothing wrong with our security. I own several companies, that's not anymore. And that was in response to, hey, we know your exchange is vulnerable. So that was not a good response. 9 minutes later, we got this email from the same company, but this was from an engineer, saying, oh, wow, we really appreciate this. We'll give you a shout if there's any questions. So same company, two different people, two different responses. I think we ended up forwarding this email to the CEO, and we never heard from them again. So we got them. So that's kind of the history of the attack and of gas token, but there's a lot of interesting metrics and stuff going on with gas and gas markets and gas tokens now, and here's going to be a bunch of screenshots that kind of describe that in a pretty interesting way. I'm sure you guys have all seen this, but when Fairwind was going on, the gas prices were pretty high. They're lower now, but I assume they'll be higher at some point. When these prices are high, people can really start taking advantage of gas tokens. And so if people printed gas tokens when they were cheap, when gas was maybe 1 gig away, they can now print it, they can now start using this at a much higher price. This is the block gas limit. Again, this was made about 2 weeks ago when we were rising the block gas limit to about 8.5. I think we got up to 10 million. And I think since then it's back down to 8, but this is basically showing that gas usage is really increasing on the network. And good or bad, maybe it's a Ponzi scheme, maybe we have a lot of actual usage, but my intuition is that Ethereum is going to grow and the usage is also going to grow. This is actually pretty interesting. So after the, a lot of this stuff stemmed from Phil Dyan's talk at the last DevCon. But once that happened and once this exploit happened, what a lot of miners started doing was mining blocks and only filling it with gas token printing. And so you can see here most of these transactions are all zero transaction fee. meaning the miner included his own transaction and he paid zero for it. And so he didn't have to pay a single dime for any gas, and he got minted 8 million gas worth of gas token, which is, if someone like you or me were to do it, we'd have to pay the normal gas price. And so what we're seeing now is a lot of miners are actually basically filling blocks with zero gas limit, or I'm sorry, gas price. And what's happening with that is it's a win-win for the miner because they get gas tokens, but what happens is they also start clogging up the network because they're not propagating normal transactions. And so that's one of the reasons why this is could be a dangerous thing. If you have all the miners are just including their own transactions for the gas token, they're not sending actual transactions through. And this is a graph of the transactions of gas token. I didn't put the line in here, but right around this time was DevCon last year, and you can see that people started getting interested in it. Phil Diane had a great speech about gas tokens and front running. Our exploit article came out about a month later. So I think a lot of people started recognizing it, and then a little later on, it just kind of became a thing. And it looks like it's growing, and it's going to become more and more ubiquitous. It was also used, gas tokens were also used a little bit during the CryptoKitties phase for arbitrage, like I explained earlier. I'm not going to get into that, but there's a lot of articles on it that are super interesting. It's also happening on ETH Classic. Miners are also basically paying nothing and getting gas tokens. ETH Classic's a little more interesting, or a little interesting in a different way in that it's really cheap. For $5, you can basically print tons and tons of gas tokens. Now, the proportionate price of ETH Classic versus ETH means that these aren't worth much or anything, and it doesn't totally matter that you don't need to pay much, but this is kind of showing that, hey, it is happening on ETH Classic, too. Like the Etherscan page, this is an ETH Classic Explorer that shows the same thing with no gas payments and just gas minting. And what's interesting is you can imagine this is an ERC-20 token, and so people can trade it. So this is an example of an exchange on ETH Classic, and it doesn't look like it's too highly used, but it is an exchange, and people are trading gas tokens. The price is it's an interesting market because you have an exchange. You can also mint the gas token, and so you can natively price the token. You can also trade it. There's basically two different markets going on. Mainnet on Ethereum doesn't necessarily have a marketplace at this time, though I did see right before this talk that there is a Uniswap gas token marketplace. So it's coming. I don't know when it's going to happen. There's a good chance it might be removed. There's a whole concept of storage rent that may actually nullify all of this, but it's all in the future, and we'll see if it actually happens. Finally, there's a package that you can just install and start running. It's called the Gas Token Miner from Stator Network, and you click one button on your computer, and it just starts minting gas token for you. You have to fund it, obviously, but it's about as easy to mint gas token at this point as just clicking a button on your computer. So I think it's going to become more and more prevalent as time goes on. This is more of a reference slide, but here's a few addresses that are currently arbitraging the network on different DeFi exchanges. Some of them are using gas token, and if you want to see how people are using it, try to kind of look into these addresses and the transactions and how they process it, because it's pretty complicated. A lot of transactions going on. I'm sorry, a lot of calls are being made in one transaction. It's really, really fascinating. But it'll give you an insight to how this is actually being used. Finally, how to protect yourself. Pay attention to your gas limits. Like I showed with the mobile interfaces, if the app is abstracting away gas from you, it's almost dangerous. It's almost more dangerous than knowing what you're getting into. So maybe it's more of a social thing about learning about this instead of abstracting it away. Transact with only trusted parties. This is hard. This is like saying only give money to your friends and not a merchant. Obviously, it's not realistic, but if you do know that, hey, I'm interacting with Uniswap and I know them to be good, there's a really good chance you're not going to get siphoned. When you're subsidizing costs, set a gas limit. If you do set a gas limit, attackers can really not take much from you. If you have civil protection, like an email and username, it's really negligible. And so that is the best way to do it, but that's not always possible in crypto. The last two are a little more interesting. Look at all contract interactions and learn to code. It's not for everyone, but if you are playing in this space, there's a good chance that you're interacting with potentially malicious code, and if you really don't know how to protect yourself, it's hard. And learn to code doesn't mean like sit there and become a developer, but at least understand the basics of what's going on. A very simple understanding could save you from a lot of this stuff. And maybe not even coding, but understanding the ecosystem around coding and then where to look to see, hey, there might be an exploit that's not on a news site or something. And so basically being more familiar with everything is the point of those last two. Finally, you can look at these later, but there's references here, and a lot of these slides came from this and our own experiences back about a year ago. So, thank you. Are there any questions? I don't think.
Yeah.
Why did you cover the name of the exchanges?
Because I don't know how they'd respond if they saw a talk with
there
them.
Should be at least an informal way to know who's an asshole.
You can look at the Etherscan transaction, it'll show you.
Yeah. For the exchanges to protect themselves, is something more complicated than just setting the gas limit required?
Yeah.
There's a few things. They all have holes. So, for example, with Ethereum specifically, you can check if the interaction is going on with the contract, and the exchange should probably assume, hey, I'm only interacting with a non-contract, and they can actually check that, and a non-contract can't do this stuff, but a contract can. So an exchange can check, hey, am I interacting with a contract? There are ways around it. For example, if you deploy a contract and make the withdrawal in the same transaction, it doesn't look like a contract at that point, but it's pretty far out there. The gas limit is the best, but then that also gets into questions like, what if a user is trying to withdraw into a contract safely? And it's a really hard question, and I don't really know the answer.
They could just charge you for your fees.
They could charge you, and some exchanges actually charge a withdrawal fee that is greater than the amount of tokens that they could mint for you, and that is a really good answer. But again, it's not the perfect answer.
How good are the nodes at estimating this stuff? Because nodes, if you're running a node, you can go and estimate the gas kind of usage of a function call. How good are they at estimating whether or not the contract underneath, the gas token contract, is going to go and create X amount of data on chain?
I want to say it's super easy. Sure. I just don't think people are doing it.
Okay, yeah.
So yeah, that is a good answer. We got one more. Yeah.
So I know there's two different variants of gas token.
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit about like when you would reach for either variant?
Yeah, so there's the deeper answer to that is go to gastoken.io, I think. The quick answer is there's two ways to get a refund on Ethereum. One is to reduce state, so setting a variable from 1 to 0 collects this refund. Another way to do it is to self-destruct a contract. I think that's the more efficient way. And so if you basically create what Gas Token 2 does, it creates 1,000 contracts for you. And when you go to use it, you just destroy the contracts. And that's the type of refund. So, but GasToken.io, they have a very, very in-depth analysis of all of that. And I think that's all my time. Thank you.